$1,000. You can now get your credit score and credit report at freecreditreport.com.
I go online and in seconds I get my credit report and credit score free.
I can even print it right off my computer.
Staying on top of my credit helped me save a lot of money.
Get your free credit report and score when you sign up for a 30-day credit monitoring trial at freecreditreport.com. That's freecreditreport.com.
Listen for Flex Your Power Now alerts. They'll tell you energy demand is high in your area and to turn off any unnecessary lights. Flex Your Power Now for all Californians.
With SRN News, I'm Andrew Stewart in Washington. After making landfall near Pensacola, Florida today, Hurricane Dennis has weakened to a Category 2 storm. Dennis packing top winds of near 105 miles per hour and expected to weaken to a tropical storm overnight. Florida State meteorologist Ben Nelson.
Hurricane Dennis made landfall as a Category 3 hurricane on Santa Rosa Island between Pensacola Beach and Navarre Beach at approximately 2:25 p.m. Central Daylight Time. Currently, the hurricane is weakened to a Category 2.
Nelson also says
those winds on the south side spinning in this direction will keep onshore winds into these bays and onto the barrier islands. So the surge will be very, very slow to decline overnight tonight.
Florida State meteorologist Nelson at Florida Emergency Operations Center in Tallahassee. Florida Governor Jeb Bush calling on the nation to especially remember these storm victims.
I'd hope that people would feel compelled to provide support to the Salvation Army and to the American Red Cross and to faith-based organizations and other organizations that are making a difference and are preparing, just as we are, to provide support in a very meaningful way to the residents of Northwest Florida.
Florida Governor Jeb Bush in Tallahassee today as aired on MSNBC. Here at home, the death toll rises to 4 from the collision of 2 freight trains in Mississippi. Officials say those fatalities all believed to be crew members. Both trains collided head-on this morning. No other injuries reported. Overseas, at least 48 people dead in Iraq following today's wave of suicide bombings. U.S. officials also reporting 5 U.S. troops wounded in a roadside bomb attack in southeastern Baghdad. This is SRN News.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. Welcome to the program which challenges the notion that Christianity is nothing but mythology. No, Christianity is not mythology. The resurrection of Jesus is a fact of history, a fact better defended than many other alleged historical events. But I'll tell you what is mythology. It is mythology to believe that Christianity had nothing to do with the foundation of our country. It is a myth to believe that the Ten Commandments had nothing to do with our Constitution. Our Christian freedoms are slowly eroding today, not because we're losing elections. We're winning elections. No, we're losing these battles because of judicial activism. But once in a while, there appears on the horizon a genuine judge, a courageous judge. Judge Roy Moore is a name that you've heard a lot in the news lately, an Alabama Supreme Court justice who got into some trouble by placing a monument of the Ten Commandments outside the courthouse. We are honored to have on our program today this very same Judge Moore, a judge who I suppose you could also call activist, but activist in a whole different sense. Judge Moore obtained a Bachelor of Science degree in 1969 from the United States Military Academy at West Point. After military service, Judge Moore returned to Alabama, where he completed his doctorate degree in 1977 from the University of Alabama School of Law. Chief Justice Moore served our country as a captain in the military police corps of the United States Army. He became a circuit judge of the 16th Judicial Circuit in 1992, and Chief Justice Moore served in this capacity until his election as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Alabama in November 2000. Judge Moore, thank you so much for taking the time to appear on our program.
Well, it's certainly my honor, Bob.
Well, you're a very courageous person, and you certainly put a lot on the line for your belief. I want to talk a little bit about what happened with the Ten Commandments monument, but first, could you tell us a little bit about your own Christian upbringing, or I don't know if you converted to Christianity later on in life. What's your Christian background?
Well, I've been Christian since I was a small child, and of course, like most other Christians, we've not always lived the Christian life, and we've come back to God over periods of time, and that happened in 1982, and after a experience I had in the court system, and God had brought me back to forgive those that had done me wrong, and you know, I came into a closer relationship, and thereafter, it's been an education process about law and God and government, and you know, the meaning of the Bible and our relationship to God.
Many people will say that God really shouldn't have anything to do with public life. You've lived a very public life, and obviously you integrated your relationship with Jesus very well into that. Could you tell our audience how that goes together in your mind rather than something that should be intention?
Well, sure. I think that these people that say God has nothing to do with our public life simply misunderstand what this government and this country is all about. It was about freedom, and that freedom is given by God. In fact, the organic law of our country, the Declaration of Independence, the United States Code annotated, says we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Fantastic. In fact, when you leave God out of the question, it's very difficult for people to explain where these rights came from, isn't it?
Well, the Declaration goes further to say that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Therefore, you see that God can't be separated from government, because our organic law says that God gives us rights, and government's only role is to secure those rights for us.
Absolutely.
Now, what happens, practically, in your introduction, you talked about the understanding of Christianity in our public life. People don't understand that it's much more than just going to church on Sunday. When God gives you rights of the freedom of conscience, for example, to believe what you want to believe, that right's not given by man. But man must recognize that God who gives us that right. And when it does, then we will retain that right. But when it does not, when man presumes to take the place of God, it will presume to take away those rights from us. And that's exactly what happened in the recent two cases of Van Orden versus Perry and McCreary County versus Kentucky ACLU by the United States Supreme Court just last week.
Could you recount that for us?
Well, basically, the United States Supreme Court had two displays of the Ten Commandments before the court, one in Texas, Austin, Texas, and one in McCreary County, Kentucky.
And the Supreme Court ruled that one could be kept and one couldn't be kept. I know this was very confusing to a lot of people.
Very confusing. In fact, in the words of Justice Thomas, one of the very conservative members of the court, says, all told, this court's jurisprudence leaves courts, governments, and believers and non-believers alike confused.
Yeah,
an observation that is hardly new. And basically what he's saying is that people today don't know any more than what they did before of whether or not they can display the Ten Commandments, because courts say it depends on what we say about the context. Well, that has to be weighed each time they go to court. Let me put it this way. The courts have nothing to do about displaying monuments. Indeed, the First Amendment doesn't say anything about that. It says Congress, which is not state school teacher or legislator, or says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Those words have meaning. Now, if you skip over the argument that the word Congress can be transferred to any state action by and through the 14th Amendment, which Justice Thomas does not approve of, nor do I. But even if you accept that proposition, a monument has never been a law. It's not made by a legislature. Religion is not God. Religion was defined by the United States Supreme Court as the duties we owe to God and the manner of discharging those duties.
And isn't it true that the Supreme Court has a monument of the Ten Commandments in their own chambers anyway?
They have depictions of the Ten Commandments throughout Washington, D.C., to include the United States Supreme Court. But what the court has said in these two rulings was basically that if you deny the belief in God, you can keep your monument. If it's done merely for historical purposes, if it's done for a long period of time and not a new display, it may be acceptable. Probably not.
In other words, it's okay to have the Ten Commandments up as long as we keep it secret what the Ten Commandments were really all about and where the
Ten Commandments came from. As long as you say it just is something representing history and education, then maybe you can keep it.
Judge Moore, do you have any idea why the Supreme Court chose to be so wishy-washy on this? It seemed like they just really gave a very political response and not a response with any conviction in it.
Well, there's no confusion about that. They're wishy-washy because they do not understand the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, and they're saying it's how we feel about something. And when you talk about feelings, then your feelings are different than mine and different from the person hearing this broadcast. But when you're talking about law, law is a standard rule. And as long as you stick to the words and we know what the... Take the example of speeding. If there's a signpost that says 60 miles an hour, you know what the law is. You can go 59, but you can't go 61. That's basically what the law means. But if you have a judge ruling by his feelings, not by any sign, not by any speed limit, then you don't know whether you can speed or whether you can go 55, 56, 57, 65. You don't know what the speed limit is because you're having to go before the court to find out if you're speeding.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the day when a judge tells us what his interpretation of the speed limit is instead of us just reading it in the book.
They're doing that in the First Amendment, which is a much more serious proposition than even speeding.
Yeah.
They're saying what you can believe and what you can't believe, and it matters a whole heck of a lot because our morality is based upon a belief in God, not based on a belief in Buddha or Hinduism or Taoism.
Yeah, and what's interesting is when some display for another religion gets put up, people don't seem to get bent out of shape. They don't seem to have trouble when it's a menorah or some kind of sign from Islam. It's only Christianity. It makes us wonder if that isn't evidence of the spiritual warfare that we're also involved in.
Well, certainly. I mean, even the Federal District Court in Montgomery, Alabama, which ruled the Ten Commandments could not be displayed, has a statue or a monument to a Greek goddess of justice, Themis, outside its courthouse.
And nobody has any problem with that. And I remember with the Grand Canyon, they had the names of Indian gods, Native American gods, but they had a real problem with the Psalms being printed.
Well, it's complete hypocrisy, and it's exactly what happened in the Bible when a nation cast away its acknowledgement of God and took oaths to a belief in God and yet denied his providence. In Isaiah, the 48th chapter, the first verse, it says, "Hear ye this, O house of Jacob, which are called by the name of Israel, and are come forth out of the waters of Judah, which swear by the name of the Lord and make mention of the God of Israel, but not in truth nor in righteousness." We're doing the same thing today.
Yeah.
Our courts open with "God Save the United States, Dishonorable Court." Then they take a display of the Ten Commandments and say, "Well, you can't have this if you profess a belief in God."
It certainly is a two-faced position. We're talking to Judge Roy Moore, and you're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. We'll be right back.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
If you have a trust, you have a trustee. Maybe it's you, maybe it's your spouse, maybe it's a loved one, or maybe someone else altogether. Whoever it may be, there are fundamental things they must know and do to avoid winding up in the legal hot seat. Please join me, Stephen Mancini, attorney at law, for a free trustee training workshop to get the facts about the rights and responsibilities of the trustee. Learn more about your trust and how it really works. Find out about trustee liability. And if you are just setting up a trust, learn strategies for choosing an ideal trustee. trustee.
Attend one of these free seminars, 2 days only, Wednesday, July 13th at 10 a.m. at the Encinitas Community Center on Oakcrest Park Drive in Encinitas, and Thursday, July 14th at 10:30 a.m. and 5:45 p.m. at the Southern California Institute next to the White Mormon Temple at I-5 and Nobel in La Jolla. Ensure your trustee knows his or her rights and responsibilities. You and your trustee are encouraged to attend together. Call today for reservations, 858-200-1911. Call 858-200-1911 today.
KCBQ, where your opinion counts.
This is Judge Roy Moore. We're very honored to have him. Now, Judge Moore, please tell us a little bit about the story that made you famous, maybe infamous to some people. This story about the Ten Commandments monument that you put up. We hear all kinds of spin masters giving their version. I'd like our audience to hear it straight from you. Tell us this story. Just walk us through it from your perspective.
Well, when I took the job and position of Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court, I recognized that our Constitution, as does every Constitution in every state of the Union, acknowledges God. Ours particularly acknowledges God by saying that, invoking the favor and guidance of Almighty God, we establish justice. And, of course, that was my position as Chief Justice, to oversee the judicial system of Alabama. So, therefore, to acknowledge God is not only a nice thing to do, it was a required thing to do if we're to uphold the Constitution. That acknowledgement is not forbidden by the United States Constitution, First Amendment, nor is it forbidden by the Constitution of Alabama. Therefore, I placed a monument to the Ten Commandments in the rotunda of the Alabama Judicial Building. Now, the press and ACLU immediately went out, started talking about placed in the middle of the night to imply that something wrong was done. However, it was scheduled to be put in right after close of business at 6 o'clock on July 31st, and the monument company had trouble loading the monument and unfortunately didn't get the monument to the building till 9:30, and it did take all night. But that had no reason for them to deny the issue, because the next morning I explained it to the full press that this was not about a monument. It was about the acknowledgement of God, just like the United States Supreme Court had done in 1952 in Zorach versus Clausen, when the William O. Douglas said, our institutions presuppose a belief in a supreme being. We are religious people, he began his sentence. And certainly today, we have every right to acknowledge God, and that's what the issue was about. Eventually, the United States District Court ordered it removed and ordered me to remove it, despite the fact that his order, Judge Myron Thompson of the Federal District Court, violated both the United States Constitution and the Alabama Constitution. It was an unlawful order. I was sworn to uphold those constitutions, and I could not obey that order. And therefore, eventually, I was removed from office for failure to obey the unlawful order of the Federal District Court. Certainly, I tried to explain this, but the United States Supreme Court would not even take jurisdiction of the case. In fact, I understand very clearly why they did not. They did not want to address the legal issue about the acknowledgement of God. They would prefer to cast dispersions on the religious displays by saying, well, as long as it's religious, you can't do it. Well, that's absolutely ridiculous.
You think they're trying to have their cake and eat it, too?
That's right.
Trying to play to both sides?
That's right.
Who funded this monument? Who actually paid for its construction?
It was paid for by private, you know, benefactors.
Right, private benefactors. So not too many of us have an opportunity in life to put our faith and our beliefs on the line like that. That must have been quite a testing time for you. How did that affect you emotionally? How did that affect your family?
Well, like everything, I suppose, there were times of testing. It was up and down. Sometimes you felt that what you were doing would be recognized by people, and then sometimes you'd read some of these articles in the press where they didn't get the issue and they wouldn't let the truth out, and therefore you were discouraged. But all in all, there was no need to deny the faith that we have in God and the fact that God is the one we're grateful to for our government and our laws and our morality. That's what most people fail to recognize, is that without God and acknowledgement of God and the Bible, we have no morality. The rules of incest, bestiality, sodomy, adultery, our relationship to children are all moral issues coming not from some constitution or declaration, but from the Holy Bible. And that Bible was recognized in our law, and it is set in law. Even the United States Supreme Court recognized that marriage was a sacred institution. And yet today we're denying anything moral because it has a relationship to God, which is ridiculous.
And isn't it true that even some of our forefathers, such as Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, who were not Christians but had a deist view of God, still felt that Christianity was very good for our country?
Well, when you define deist, the way they defined deist was a deist believed in a God but didn't have any, the God that didn't have any relationship to a man or to our worldly affairs. And indeed, they did not believe that. Thomas Jefferson said in the monument that is quoted in Washington, D.C., "Can the liberties of a nation be thought secure when we have removed their only firm basis, the conviction in the minds of the people that these liberties are a gift of God, that they're not to be violated but with his wrath? Indeed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just and his justice cannot sleep forever." If Thomas Jefferson was a deist, then certainly he wouldn't believe that God would judge man for his sinful ways in slavery.
So he wasn't very consistent with the title deist, and he ended up believing in a God much closer to the Bible's version than the deist version.
Well, certainly, and if you question his belief, we must question our own, because we think that man is over God today in a way we practice our law and our government. And certainly Benjamin Franklin in the Constitutional Convention arose to his feet and said that in the beginning of the contest with Great Britain, when we were sensible of danger, we had daily prayer in this room for the divine protection. Our prayers were heard, sir, and they were graciously answered. All of us who were engaged in the struggle must have observed frequent instances of a superintending providence in our favor. And to that kind providence, we now owe this happy opportunity of consulting in peace on the means of establishing our future national felicity.
Well, that's so amazing. You have so many of these quotes just memorized, it sounds like.
You have to do things when you're defending yourself that you wouldn't normally do.
Yeah, well, being in the company of our forefathers is good company indeed. Judge Moore, I know you've come under fire not just by the liberals and the ACLU. That was obvious. That was expected. I'm not sure if you expected that there would even be some conservatives who viewed you as an opportunist. Now, I want you to know I disagree strongly with that criticism myself. But how would you answer such a charge? What would you say to a conservative who might be listening right now who agrees that religion should be part of our country, but perhaps had a problem with the way you went about it, who would have accused you of forcing the issue? What would you say to that?
Well, I'm saying that they would, had they been deceived by the arguments of the press, that what I did was to gain some position or whatever, and it completely contradicts what happened. I lost my position as the highest paying judge in the state of Alabama, one of the highest paying judges, Chief Justice.
That certainly isn't something that an opportunist would do, is it?
Well, I lost my position in midterm. I lost my health insurance, that of my children. I lost my retirement benefits. I lost everything. And they say because that was a popular position that I'm set up to run for another political office, and therefore I did it intentionally. That's ridiculous. There's never been a politician that stupid.
Yeah. What have you been doing since then? How have you been getting by, and what are you currently involved with?
I've been making speeches outside and inside the state. I've been writing, wrote a book, living more modestly, I guess you would say.
Looking back, if you had it to do again, is there anything you would do different, or are you happy?
I would do nothing differently. What I did was completely constitutional within the law, and to obey an unlawful order of a federal district judge is not following the rule of law. It's following the rule of man. It's the same thing they did in Germany in 1939, and we prosecuted them for murder. And yet today we say, oh, whatever a federal judge says, even though it contradicts logic, history, law, and the Constitution itself, that we must follow. Well, indeed, as a constitutional officer, I cannot follow that. He had complete authority, if he wanted to order the removal of monument, to order a ministerial officer to do that. Now, I say he had authority, assuming he had jurisdiction, which I do not. He did not have jurisdiction, but if he had jurisdiction, he could have ordered a ministerial officer to remove the monument. But since there was no ministerial officer named in the suit, he told me to do it, and it contradicted my oath to the Constitution of the United States and the First Amendment, and I could not comply. And therefore, we've got to understand that there's a difference between rule of law and rule of man. And when people confuse those two issues, then they will accept the arguments that whatever a judge says is law. Judges don't make law. Legislators make law. And they must, judges must interpret the words or else they can't interpret the law. And this judge, in my case, said he didn't even know what the words meant. I could quote to you from his opinion, but...
Amazing. We're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. My very special guest today, Judge Roy Moore, and we will be right back.
News Talk 1170, KCPQ.
Hi, I'm Dr. Katie Rodan. Dr. Kathy Fields and I created Proactive Solution because acne is the number one problem we see in our practices. As dermatologists, we treat acne as a physical condition. But what really affected us was seeing the emotional toll acne takes. So maybe you're the one with the breakouts. You shy away from social situations. You avoid being photographed, or you won't leave the house without makeup. So what's preventing you from trying Proactive? My guess is that you're afraid. You're afraid that it just won't work. Afraid to get your hopes up, only to be disappointed. This time you don't have to worry. We are so confident that Proactive will work for you that I'm offering you a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactive Solution.
To get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactive Solution, just call 1-800-420-8744 and you'll become a believer. Call 1-800-420-8744. 1-800-420-8744. Call now.
Anyone can ride an SUV, but not everyone rides it right. Keeping your SUV on all fours means inspecting tire inflation regularly, knowing how to load it properly, and slowing down a little. Remember, an SUV isn't a car. Find out how you ride at SUV.com. ESUVEE.com.
KCBQ, where your opinion counts.
Sometimes in history, a person has to take drastic action to get the attention of people. This is what Judge Moore did when he erected the Ten Commandments in front of a courthouse in Alabama, lost his job for it, lost his health insurance, put a lot on the line, lost even the respect of some fellow conservatives. But he's standing by his convictions. He's made it very clear that if he had it to do again, he would do it again exactly the same way. I guess, Judge Moore, you can't put a price on peace of mind and a clear conscience, can you?
Well, I guess not. Neither can you put a price on obeying your oath. I mean, men have risked, throughout the ages, men have suffered death rather than subordinate their allegiance to God, to the authority of the state. I quoted that because that is exactly what the United States Supreme Court said in the case of Girard versus United States in 1946. They said, throughout the ages, men have suffered death rather than to subordinate their allegiance to God to the authority of the state. And they went on to say religious freedom in the First Amendment is a product of that struggle between the state and the conscience. And today we've forgotten, you know, the basis upon which religious liberty exists in this country.
We certainly have. One of the themes we've been talking about a lot on my show recently are these words, separation between church and state. They're always heralded, but they actually don't even appear in our Constitution. Could you tell our audience a little bit about how that notion of separation between church and state developed?
Well, the words separation of church and state do not appear in the Constitution, Declaration, or Articles of Confederation, or any other similar document. Nevertheless, the concept of separation of church and state is embodied in the First Amendment. It did not prohibit the acknowledgement of God. It did not separate God and the state. It did not separate Christian principles in the state. It separated the way we worship God from the authority of the state, i.e., it kept the federal government out of the affairs of the states with regard to religion, the duties we owe to the Creator, and the manner of discharging those duties. And that is exactly what the federal government is ignoring. It is ignoring the very purpose and meaning of the First Amendment and violating its very purpose by prohibiting the acknowledgement of God. When it does that, it makes unlawful orders. And basically, just as Justice Thomas said in the beginning of his opinion in the case before the United States Supreme Court in Van Orden versus Perry, let me quote to you if I may.
Sure.
He says, "I have previously suggested that the clauses, text, and history resist incorporation against the states. If the Establishment Clause does not restrain the states, then it has no application here, where only state action is at issue." In other words, what Thomas was saying, Justice Thomas, is saying that we shouldn't even be handling this case. And then he goes on to say, but even if you assume that the clause is incorporated, or if the free exercise clause limits the power of states to establish religion, then our task would be far simpler if we just return to the original meaning of the word establishment. And I might add to the word religion. Because, you see, they don't want to address the meaning of words. They want to rule by the way they feel, and they leave the people of this country confused as to what they can do and what they can't do.
Yeah, people have the idea that any time some symbol offends them, that they have some constitutional right, which isn't even really in the Constitution.
Exactly.
And isn't it true that the word separation between church and state first appeared on a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote the Danbury Baptist?
On January 1st, 1802, he put the words wall of separation between church and state.
And that was to protect the church from the state.
That's right.
It wasn't even about protecting the state from the church. People have it in reverse.
That's right. And it wasn't about separating the acknowledgement of God from the state. In fact, he ended his letter, "Reciprocating for your kind prayers and protections for the common blessings in the Father and Creator of mankind." And 2 days after that, on January 3rd, 1802, he was in church listening to a Baptist minister in Congress where they held church throughout his administration. He didn't even separate the worship of God.
And then isn't it true that many years later a court quoted Thomas Jefferson out of context, and then that kind of established this precedent for the phrase separation between church and state?
Well, on February 10th of 1947, they quoted Jefferson, wall of separation between church and state in the case of Everson versus Board of Education. But interestingly enough, in 1878, the case of U.S. versus Reynolds, they also quoted Jefferson, but in a proper text. And they said that basically, they said that to suffer the civil magistrate, such as a judge, to intrude his powers into the field of opinion and restrain the profession or propagation of principles on supposition of their ill tendency is a dangerous fallacy which at once destroys all religious liberty. They went on to say that it's time enough for the rightful purposes of civil government for its officers to interfere when principles break out into overt acts against peace and good order. In these two sentences lies a true distinction of what properly belongs to the church and what to the state. Now, to explain that, if I may, is they're basically saying when a judge tells you what you can believe and what you can't believe and calls it religious liberty, that's ridiculous. It's all right for certain acts to be prohibited when they interfere with peace and good order. But if you confuse the two, then you lose the separation between church and state.
Well, another myth that's going on today, and it's very related since so much of this happens in the courts, is the myth that the courts have a right to interpret the law, tell us what it means, and legislate from the bench. Could you tell us how this whole thing got started?
Well, they do have the right to interpret the law, but that means by going by the meaning that the legislators meant to the words.
It's not a subjective, touchy-feely interpretation.
It's not what they feel it means due to changing times or some international law. It means to go by the rules and it's written by the legislature. This judge in Alabama, federal district court, said he didn't even know what the words meant. He then went on further to say that indeed it was dangerous and unwise to define the words. Now, he can't really interpret law if he can't define the words, but that's exactly what he tried to do.
Wow.
And that ends up being legislation from the bench.
What do you see ahead for the future of our country? Are you optimistic? Are you pessimistic? What do you see ahead for these kinds of issues?
If you have a belief in God, you have to be optimistic, because God only works when it seems impossible with mankind. Indeed, it seems impossible to restore the understanding of our Constitution to so many people who have been trained otherwise. But I think again, that it's not within man's power, but it's certainly within God. With man, it may be impossible, but with God, all things are possible.
Well, this subject is certainly on everybody's mind this week with the resignation of Sandra Day O'Connor. Do you have any thoughts about that, about where we might be headed with Bush's prospective nominee?
Well, I think we've got to don't think that it's just a Republican-Democrat thing. I think it's more or less an understanding of the Constitution, and many Republican appointees have not been good for the court, just like many Democratic appointees have not been good for the court. We've got to have conservative justices who understand the Constitution and the rule of law. For example, Sandra Day O'Connor was a Republican appointee in the Reagan administration, but she, in fact, ruled that Alabama couldn't even have a law that said that they could have children could have a minute of silence or voluntary prayer.
Yeah, she ended up having more in common with Ted Kennedy, I think.
Well, certainly she does, and she's ruled against, in fact, she ruled against both cases of the Ten Commandments in this recent decisions, and she's ruled in favor of abortion. Everything she's done has been adverse to conservatism.
What kind of issues are you currently involved with? Is there anything hitting the political mainstream that your organization is working on right now?
Well, we've fashioned the Constitutional Restoration Act, and it's before Congress, and I've been speaking about that in my private speeches and talking about the fact that we should allow Congress to act under Article 3, Section 2 to regulate the jurisdiction of the United States Supreme Court when a federal district or local official, state official, acknowledges God as a sovereign source of law, liberty, or government. Then the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court and federal district courts cannot exist, nor can they rule by international law.
That would be such a dream come true if that could pass. What do you think its chances are?
Well, we're very optimistic, and if anybody wants to find further writings on this Constitutional Restoration Act or anything about it, they can go to morallaw.org and find those things posted.
Okay, morallaw.org. Well, the time certainly went by quickly. Judge Moore, what an honor it was to have you on our program. Thank you for taking the time, and I do hope you'll come again sometime.
We will, sir. Thank you.
Okay, God bless you.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
Identity theft is a crime that occurs when someone uses your name, social security number, credit card number, or other personal information without your permission. It is one of the fastest growing crimes in America. Victims of identity theft often pay a high price to regain their identity and repair the damage. You can prevent identity theft by taking a few precautionary measures. Don't leave your wallet or statements lying around, even at home. Don't carry your Social Security card in your purse or wallet. For more of these tips, log on to usdoj.gov.
Hi, KCBQ's financial editor, certified financial planner Marty Schneider here.
And I'm Stacy Denherter, estate planning attorney. We're inviting you to join us for the last workshop of the summer. It's happening Saturday, July 16 from 9 to noon at Canyon View Church of Christ in San Diego.
Did you know that 96% of all Americans never achieve financial independence by the time they retire? That means that instead of enjoying their golden years free of money-related worries, the vast majority are having to rely on the government, their families, or continuing to work to maintain their lifestyles.
And did you know that 85% of Americans have no estate plan? That means they leave their families in turmoil when they die or become incapacitated.
So what's the culprit? Well, it's debt and procrastination. Our lack of prosperity can be traced directly to our willingness to let debt ruin our financial lives. But how can we live a debt-free lifestyle in America? Well, come and find out on Saturday morning, July 16th from 9 o'clock till 12 noon at Canyon View Church of Christ. You need a reservation, so call my office at 1-800-727-PLAN. That's 800-727-PLAN.
KCBQ, where your opinion counts.
You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show I enjoyed that interview with Judge Moore, and he is always welcome on our program, but who could ever be more welcome than my co-host, Sharon Cashard?
It is so good to be back, Bob.
Did you have a nice vacation? You were in Pennsylvania?
And Virginia and Washington, D.C.
Wow, you did the whole...
Yeah.
How long were you in Washington, D.C.?
Just for overnight, actually.
Did
one
you
night.
Go by and look at that plaque of the Ten Commandments of the Supreme Court's head court?
That would have been in Alabama, right?
Well, no, the one that's over the Supreme Court.
Oh, yes. D.C. No, we didn't go to the Judiciary Building. We went to the Capitol, actually.
Okay. There's a few plaques the ACLU hasn't heard of.
That's right.
It's awfully nice to have you back, and I mean that.
Thank you so much. You know, the ACLU has good people like Moore running around in circles, you know, trying to defend himself against frivolous lawsuits like the Ten Commandments monument. And he talked about at the very end of this segment about the Constitutional Restoration Act.
Yes, which sounds very intriguing.
It's a very proactive response that I think has great promise. However, he did mention morallaw.org as a place to find out more about it. In fact, I went there and I couldn't find anything out about it there, so I just Googled the Constitution.
Maybe they need to post it and it could hasn't be. Gone up yet.
Yeah. So I Googled it, Constitution Restoration Act. And, Bob, this is very intriguing. The bill rests legally on Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution, and it allows Congress to make exceptions as to what kinds of cases the federal courts might hear.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Unfortunately, I'm not sure this thing stands a lawyer's chance in hell of passing, although I do believe in miracles. I do believe God could do a miracle.
Well, let me.
I think that's what it would take.
Yeah, I think you might be right. The CRA would remove from the court's jurisdiction all cases involving the public acknowledgement of God as the source of American law and government. Had it been in place last year, the federal court would not have been able to rule on Judge Moore's right to display the Ten Commandments, and he'd still be in office. So this bill is critically important to addressing the growing trend in our federal courts to deny the rights of our states and their citizens to acknowledge God openly and freely. So hopefully it'll pass. The other thing that this bill talks about is it proposes to impeach judges who base their decisions on foreign law.
Oh, I love this foreign law. Oh, well, let's do it like the United Nations.
That's
I'm
right.
So tired of that.
Well, do you remember last year this U.S. Supreme Court cited Canadian law
yes.
and European law in some sodomy cases in Texas? And then earlier this year, the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts did the same in ordering the state legislation to enact law granting full marriage rights to homosexuals.
Yeah.
So anyway, they were using European and other international law.
My identity
in order to
does not come from the global village, and I hope no other Americans will either.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're excited about this Restoration Act, and
I am too. And by the way, I made that little joke about a lawyer's chance in hell. I just remember two lawyers sponsor this program. We didn't mean either of you two when I said that.
You know, one of the things he was talking about, and it should be alarming to all of us, is when judges who are sworn to interpret law cannot even define the words in the law. And in the case of Judge Thompson, he used the words religion or religious more than 150 times in a 79-page opinion against Judge Moore. But he said he could not even define the term, which is ridiculous. How
yeah.
can you rule on something if you're not even defining it?
And wouldn't they teach that at law school? I mean, this is –
yeah.
know what those terms mean?
Yeah, exactly. He brought up – let's see. He brought up a few other things why he didn't obey the order to remove the monument.
He felt there was a higher law that,
mm-hmm.
and that it was not unconstitutional to have the monument up.
Right. And so he felt like in fact, the ACLU was acting unlawfully by ordering him to take it down.
The ACLU acting unlawfully? No.
He also, in his book, by the way, I read his book this week, and So Help Me God. I know you've heard of it because I've talked to you a little
yes.
bit about it. Yeah. He talks there about a court-martial trial of Lieutenant William Cully in Vietnam, who killed more than 100 innocent.
Oh, the My Lai massacres. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And he tried to defend himself, Cally did, by claiming that he was following orders. The tribunal rejected his defense by saying that an order to kill civilians, even if given by superior officer, did not excuse his conduct because such orders are clearly unlawful. And that was one of the sort of precursors that Moore used when he was talking about his right not to obey an unlawful
dictate. Yeah, that's the big criticism, that he, as a judge of all people, should be following the law. But if it becomes an evil law, mm-hmm. that's another story. And we went through that during the Nuremberg trials when the high Nazi war criminals were up there. Every one of them defended themselves by saying, I was just following orders. And, yeah, I pushed the Jew into the oven because if I didn't, somebody else would have. And I pushed him in more gently. And we have to obey the law after all. Well, we obey the law as long as it's a good law.
Right. And what was kind of difficult here was not only did Judge Thompson's order run contrary to both the United States Constitution and the Constitution of Alabama, but his unlawful order commanded Moore to remove the monument because it acknowledged God. And it was for that reason he could not remove it because it violated his oath.
That's right.
And conscience.
So he said, let somebody else remove it,
and
not me.
Exactly. Yeah, which eventually that's how it went down, right?
Yeah.
So fascinating interview with Judge Moore.
I
wished
it.
I would have been part of that.
Yeah. Well, you could have been if you'd have gotten back from Pennsylvania in time.
Yeah, well, you know, family duty
everybody.
Calls.
I called Sharon's cell phone to tell her she could be a part of this interview if she got back on time. And I get her sister who tells me Sharon left her cell phone in Pennsylvania.
And Mr. Flight.
And Mr. Flight as well.
Yeah.
So, well, you'll catch the next interview.
Yeah, I will. Champs Lyons was an associate justice in the Alabama court, and he wrote something very interesting to let the other justices know why he voted with the rest of the justices to remove the monument. This is fascinating. He says, no intellectually honest legal scholar can say that the framers of the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, when they choose the words, Congress shall pass no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, intended that a monument depicting the Ten Commandments in the lobby of the United States Courthouse would violate its provisions. I'm dismayed by the precedent from the United States Supreme Court that yields the conclusion that the Chief Justice's display of a monument in the rotunda of our building constitutes prohibited state action in the form of law respecting an establishment of religion.
Yeah, this business that the judiciary can interpret the law, it is such nonsense. We always hear this with the Bible, too. The Bible means whatever we interpret it to mean. Words are clear.
Mm-hmm.
And words mean what the writers of the words meant. There are so many diaries. There's so much we could read in the Federalist Papers to tell us just exactly what our forefathers' intentions were, as if the words in the Constitution weren't clear enough
mm-hmm.
already. And so now it means that somebody has a right to not be offended because there's a cross up on Mount Soledad. It's just
mm-hmm.
ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Well, that you know what? Cases like this would not even be allowed to come before the Supreme Court if the Constitution Restoration Act passes.
Yeah, boy.
And like in God We Trust and the Pledge of Allegiance under God.
Including God.
All of that would be, you know, taken away from their jurisdiction. They're frivolous lawsuits, really. Think about it.
It'll just be wonderful if this thing passes. Well, pray, everybody, because that's the only chance it has is through prayer, really, because
mm-hmm.
the politicians are more concerned about being politically correct than doing what their constituents that voted them into office want them to do. They've taken polls, and it's very clear that the far majority of Americans, even the ones who are not Christians, don't really have a problem with seeing a cross around somebody's neck or on a hill or saying the word God in public or at the pledge. It's a few people, and they're making a very loud squeak. It's like the old novel of the mouse that roared. And people are rolling over and playing dead. And we have politicians that worry far too much about their popularity. So you get these moderate statements. For instance, a man like John McCain, he's going to be useless in this. You're going to hear from him, well, we have a heritage that includes God, of course, but we also have to consider the feelings of blah, 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 blah. And that's all we're going to get from these people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, Souter recently expanded part of the Constitution by saying that you can use eminent domain for public purposes. Have you heard
about
that?
Oh, I love this one. Yeah, the government can now seize your private property, not even to be used by a government agency, but because some private person might want to put up a mall. Mm-hmm. So we can seize property from one private person, give it to another private corporation. And I guarantee you, if the country ever had a chance to vote on this, I can guarantee you which way the vote would go. But we'll never vote on it, will we? Because the Supreme Court,
these decreed it.
Nine robes made the decision for us. This is not just judicial activism. It's judicial tyranny. Some could call it a dictatorship.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you want to hear some poetic justice in this case?
Oh, I would love to hear some poetic justice in this case.
I guess Souter lives in Connecticut. He has a house there, and a private citizen who wants to put in a mall, if I'm not mistaken. I read this in the Washington Post when I was on the East Coast. Or is it the Washington Times? It's the Washington Times. That's the more conservative newspaper.
Was it an accurate story?
I think it was accurate.
The Washington Times.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, he applied to take Judge Souter, who was the majority opinion in favor of allowing private citizens to take other private citizens' property. He applied for the right to take Souter's house and use it for a mall and a museum.
Oh, boy. Talk
great?
About the chickens coming home to roost. Well, that almost makes the ruling worth it.
Exactly.
I wonder if the judge will call an emergency meeting of the Supreme Court and get that thing turned. Hey, I didn't mean it like that. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. We'll be right back.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ.
Hey, folks, whenever I'm down in the San Diego area, or nearly always, I stop by Soul Comfort, S-O-L-E Comfort. It is one of the great shoe stores in America as far as I'm concerned. They began in La Jolla, now they're in Carlsbad and Newport Beach. Three locations now. SoulComfortShoes.com is also a place you can order their shoes from. That's on the web. But you should stop in at their stores. Whatever the brand, they probably carry it, at least if it's a good brand. Allen Edmonds, Dansko, Mephisto, Cole Haan. Their phrase is, listen to your feet. If you do any amount of walking, and who doesn't really, you will benefit. I got a pair of sandals there, I think 4 years ago. I am still wearing them. In fact, that is my preferred mode of transportation, is on those sandals from Mephisto, as it happens. Give them a call, 866-55-SHOES. Again, Carlsbad, Newport Beach, and La Jolla, Soul Comfort, S-O-L-E, Comfort. And it's SoulComfortShoes.com.
Men, do you feel embarrassed in a bathing suit or at the gym? Have you grown love handles and a spare tire since your athletic younger days? No matter how much you diet or exercise, is working out not working out? Dr. Jeffrey Schaefer at New Image Cosmetic Surgery has helped countless men regain a slimmer look and lead more fulfilled and confident lives with his micro-lipo technique. He performs more liposculpture procedures than any other surgery center in Southern California and uses a safer alternative to general anesthesia. With Dr. Schaefer's rapid recovery method, you can have the procedure on a Friday and return to work on a Monday. At New Image Cosmetic Surgery, they understand this is a sensitive issue, so call now for a free and private consultation. The number is 877-MICRO-LIPO. That's 877-MICRO-LIPO. Mention KCBQ and receive two free Padres tickets when you book your procedure. Give them a weekend and they'll give you a new image. Call 877-MICRO-LIPO.
KCBQ, where your opinion counts.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
And we're back. There will be another hour of the Bob Siegel Show following this one, but on our sister station, KPRZ, that's 1210 on the dial, not far from where you are now, 4 o'clock on KPRZ, second hour of the Bob Siegel Show. Those of you listening to KCBQ up in Los Angeles area may not be able to pick up the KPRZ broadcast, but rest assured, you can still join us. You can do anything you really want to do. You can join us over the internet by going to kprz.com and just clicking the little icon that says Listen Live, or you will find that program posted on my website tomorrow morning, www.bobsiegel.net. Before we take our phone call, we're going to do a little bit of this week's news. London had its own version of 9/11, as you all know, a horrible terrorist attack that killed some 60 people and injured hundreds. And what is the big news media event being covered right now? What is the only news story you can hear on 24-hour cable networks right now? That's right, the Florida hurricane. Look, I mean no disrespect. If I were living in Florida, that would be the most important news to me. In fact, I have relatives in Florida, and I am concerned about them. But worldwide 24-hour news networks discussing this, and only this, to the exclusion of all other stories, there's no other news going on in the world right now, something is not right here. So I will be discussing the terrorist attack on our next hour. Our phone number here is 1-888-344-1170. Mark and Santee, you're on the Bob Siegel Show.
Hello?
Hello, Mark. You're on the Bob Siegel Show.
Hi. Well, I guess it's better to talk about hurricanes and Michael Jackson, so.
Well, that's it. Yeah, it was a hurricane when the space shuttle crashed. We heard that for 48 hours, and there's never any new news. It's just Geraldo or somebody with the hurricane blowing his cap up. I'm standing right here, Greta, close to the eye of the storm. It's nuts. What's on your mind today, Mark?
Well, I have a question that I want to see you answer, and it has to do with terrorism.
Okay, and we will discuss that for our entire hour, or at least most of our hour coming up, too.
Okay.
But well, let's go ahead and start it now.
But here's my question. There's been a movement among Christians in the last decade or so that everybody's aware of called What Would Jesus Do? And the idea is that Christians would try to do whatever Jesus would do in any situation. Now, we know that Jesus was himself acquainted with terrorism because the Roman Empire used terror to keep its people in line.
That is correct.
In fact, I remember reading once that the Romans would go into a village and capture and crucify 100 or more people, men, women, children, and line them up along the road to the village.
Yes, and there was an underground organization called the Zealots that were trying to overthrow the Romans.
Right. So here's my question based on all that is, I mean, one of the things we're trying to figure out is what's the correct response to terrorism. And if I try to apply that little anecdote, what would Jesus do, to try to respond to terrorism, I'm not sure what I would come up with.
So well, it depends on which coming of Jesus we're talking about, too, because at his second coming, he's going to put an end to terrorism, evil, militarism. He's going to put an end to everything like that. During his first coming, Mark, his mission was to go to the cross, not to start the revolution and beat the snot out of the Romans like the Jews wanted him to. But he did make that very clear that he was going to do that during his second coming. So when we kind of take a snapshot of Jesus out of context of everything that prophecy says he's going to do, I'm not sure we get a completely honest picture of what Jesus would do. Now, I do know that at the time Christianity started, it was important to him that people understand that Christianity was going to be a peaceful revolution, a revolution that conquers minds and hearts and doesn't conquer territory. That principle, I do not believe, has changed. But it's also true that part of the gospel is not only helping people to turn from the sin they've committed and helping people to be forgiven of the sin they've committed, but helping people to speak out against and fight the effects of sin and liberating people from the effects of sin. So in a way, we have two sides of the cross here, two sides of the gospel. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a good answer.
Okay, well, Mark, stay with us on our next hour. It was wonderful being with all of you and KCBQ, and please join us in our next hour. We will continue to talk about the terrorist attacks in England, and we do want to get your responses, your opinions. What should a Christian's response be to terrorism? Should we take a pacifist position? Should we fight it? You are always welcome. Your questions are welcome, too.